Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, just know that all of our shows, including this one, can be found at answers.network. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a wonderful favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, our question for today comes from Rebecca in Chicago, Illinois. And she writes, "Dear Answers, I'm a 25-year-old female with a business degree. I graduated during COVID and have had difficulty finding a job that I feel good about. I want a job that I can feel like I'm making a difference and yet not be a slave to it. What do you suggest?" Well, to answer this question and more, our guest, Susan Combs, is president of Combs & Company, a full-service insurance brokerage firm based in New York City. Now, Susan started the company at 26 years old with a drive to do more better. This internal mantra has resulted in numerous successes and firsts, like being named the youngest national president of Women in Insurance and Financial Services and the first female Broker of the Year winner. Now, Susan describes herself as a Missouri girl in a New York world. And it's the lesson she learned during her Midwestern upbringing and 2+ decades in New York City that are the basis of her new book, Pancakes for Roger, a mentorship guide for slaying dragons. Now, the insights contained in these pages come from family, friends, colleagues, and life. Susan shares that the most important teachings are from her late father, adding that it was his guidance in life that set her foundation, and it was his passing that inspired her to write the book. When Susan's not running her business or trying to help others through their own challenges, you can find her supporting the Missouri Tigers, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Royals, or slaying dragons that happen to come her way. Susan, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan. Well, that's quite an introduction. I got a lot to live up to on that list.
Well, and I didn't think about it before we went on the air, but I was going to tell you that there's a couple of players on the Royals that I'm a big fan of. So I'm hoping with a couple of these new young players that they're going to start making a difference in baseball.
Yeah. It was fun seeing them get to win the World Series. I was at the only game that they lost in the World Series against the Mets. So that was a little bit disappointment, but the last time I got to cheer for them was, I believe, 1983. And I was pretty young then. So it was a lot of fun for sure.
Well, like I said, they've got some good young players, so I think they're on their way back.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's hope.
Yes. Now, before we talk about your father and your journey, what advice would you give Rebecca?
Whew. Yeah, you know, the first thing I would say is, are you looking for a job or are you looking for a career? So those are two very, very different things. And when I mentor people, I talk about this a lot. A job is just, you know, you can clock in, clock out. It pays the bills. It's a means to an end. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for a career path, a lot of times you're willing to do without, or you're willing to make sacrifices because you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Right. So anytime, I mean, I have a glorified business degree. I started out college. I had a full ride in chemical engineering scholarship with the Air Force that I did not finish. And I changed my major a total of 6 times before graduating with a hotel and restaurant management degree, which with a minor in math. So I always say it's a business degree with cooking classes is what I, but you know, I think that a lot of times when people don't know what they want to do, I always encourage them to do informational interviews with people that they admire. So a lot of times there's a lot of busy executives out there, but if you reach out to them and say, hey, I've been watching you on social media, or I've seen you in the news, and I've really admired your career path, and I'm wondering if that's something that would work for me down the road. And I think if you can schedule those informational interviews where you can see what they really look like, because a lot of times people think being an executive can be pretty glamorous, and it can be once you've been doing it for a while, but it doesn't usually start out that way. So a lot of times people just kind of navigate and bump into things along the way until they kind of find their home. I do think in business, anytime that you, if you're doing sales or something like that, if that's something that kind of lights you up, I would encourage you to try to find a position with a large national sales company, because you can't put a price tag on the training. I started out my career, I was hospitality, but my first big job in New York City was for Paychex, the payroll company. Mm-hmm. And it's a nationally held company. And I did catering, I did banquets, I did events, I did concerts. The last thing I thought I would be selling was payroll. But the sales training that I got there, and learning how to network and learning how to just, you know, think on the fly and present to people really quickly, I can't put a price tag on that. And then that parlayed into different opportunities along the way. So depending upon what your interests are, I would definitely look at, you know, informational interviews, look at things where you can develop a niche market, because I think women work very, very well in niche markets, because mm-hmm. then you can, you know, combine maybe some of your passions and your loves, and then you'll really excel in your career path too.
Yeah. What I got from the question was, you know, the key thing of wanting to make a difference, which I think is great. And that's what I feel that you've done with this book. So whatever it was that you felt that you were doing from a business standpoint, I still think there was just this thing of, I'm going to make a difference in the world. And that's why I thought you would be such a perfect person to not only to answer this question, but to be on this show, because that's what we want to bring. We want to bring people that are making a difference and willing to put it out there, be it in a book, be it in seminars, be it as a mentor, but doing those things to make a difference in other people's lives. And that's what I think you're doing.
Thank you for that.
Now, let's talk first about your father before we go into a lot of things in regards to yourself, because obviously his name is right there in the book. Yes. So beyond being your father, you know, who was Roger in the eyes of others?
So my father was a giant. He wasn't very tall, but he was a giant. My father, he served in 3 branches of service for 39 years and 4 months. So he started out as a career combat helicopter pilot. And then he was Army. And then when he retired as a major general, he was in the Air Force. And so he had that career path. But then also in his civilian life, he went to law school and he became a judge. But he was a mentor. He was a confidant. He was a church board member. He was a pillar of his community. And I mean, I grew up in a tiny town of 1,000 people, 6 miles from where my father was literally born on our family dairy farm. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those guys that really, he always stayed true to who he was, and he always stayed humble. So my father has a 4-page Wikipedia page, but he always remembered where he came from. And that was always been something that, no matter, living in New York City for over 20 years now, I've always, like you said before, a Missouri girl in a New York world. So I think that's very important to kind of stay humble and know where you came from. And my father was such a living example of that, for sure.
Well, and that's certainly the feeling that I got in reading the book. Now, in regards to yourself, other than what I described in the introduction, what have you learned and what have you accomplished following the advice in the pages of your own book?
Well, it depends on the day, to be honest. You know, and the thing is, I never set out to write a book. It was never on my radar. And it was one of those things that I speak quite a bit publicly. And when I would speak publicly, I would end my talks with what I would call unsolicited advice. And so they were just quick quotes from people that I had gotten that had mentored me. And I would give a little bit of insight about them. So that's, you know, kind of where the framework started, mm-hmm. I guess, for the book. But, you know, there's lessons I have from my father that pop into my head every single day. You know, I mean, drive the car is a lesson that I hear a lot of people throw back at me a lot. That, you know, it comes from when he was teaching myself and my brothers how to drive on the highway. and just having a cadence about it that, you know, you can be the best driver in the world, but you have to keep your head about you and you have to worry about everything else around you. Mm-hmm. So having that cadence of drive the car, drive the car, drive the car, he would jerk the steering wheel, have us go off the road, and we had to maintain our composure, slow down, and then re-enter traffic, because he just wanted us to remember that sometimes you have to just put first things first, break things down into bite size. I think sometimes when it comes to making a decision in our life, we can get so overwhelmed because it's such a, you know, big process. Mm-hmm. But if you just kind of make things simple and remember to drive the car, then it usually kind of works out for me too.
Now you mentioned the drive the car, which again is one of the one of the chapters in part one of your book. One of the ones that intrigued me, and I think our viewers and listeners would love to know more about it, is don't let your alligator mouth overload your tadpole behind.
Yes, that's actually from my mother. Oh God. I mean, so that one, my dad always told me I was a little too fast for Missouri, from a very early age. And so New York just works for me, but it was just a reminder to not get too big for my britches, because sometimes I could, you know, I mean, I, at the end of the day, I look pretty good on paper. But it was a reminder to me to always stay humble and true and remember where I came from. But that actually comes from my mother that grew up outside Chicago, like Rebecca did too.
We have a question that's coming in from a listener. Again, I want to take the time to thank those that send these questions in. And I know that some of them come in from teachers or people that are working. They'll send it in the night before, or they'll send it in now, knowing that they're not going to hear the show till later. So again, I just appreciate the fact that people are that involved that they want to send these questions in. This one reads, I hail from a family of Air Force pilots, so I can relate to the impact of being raised in a military environment. My father and three uncles taught me to be resourceful, independent, while also understanding the value of teamwork. Above all, they emphasized truth, being responsible for one's mistakes, and always going the distance to get the job done. I purchased a copy of your book for myself and my teenage daughter. What age group do you see benefiting most by reading the book? My hope is that it may give her a different insight into what my life was like growing up. And this is from Aaron in Pennsylvania.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron. You know, to be honest, I've actually had people as young as 10 tell me they read the book. There's some colorful stories that I don't know if I would want a 10-year-old reading, but for the most part, I think there's great lessons. And I've actually had military guys that have reached out to me and said, I'm using this as a guide to raise a strong daughter. And that just really makes me happy. Yeah. You know, I actually had a good friend named Heather that her father was in a really horrible accident. He was on his scooter, mm-hmm. mobility scooter, and he was crossing the street when a large SUV rounded the corner and hit him, threw him 20 feet, broke so many bones, has had just a really big road to recovery. And she stayed connected with me. And she said, I just keep thinking about your book and remembering some of the lessons of you'll never regret the time you spend. And in taking, you know, being active in your family and showing up when you need to show up. And so, you know, I think that you get a lot of different age ranges. I would say when I wrote the book, if you ever write a book, a lot of times what you do is you create a character in your head, like an avatar. Mm-hmm. And so you write the book towards that fictional person that you've created, because it just makes it easier to do that. Because they say, if you say, okay, I'm writing the book for everybody, then it's going to be for nobody. So you need to be really specific. So I will tell you that when I wrote the book, I was writing it almost to a younger version of myself, you know, about the, you know, the 20 to 25 year old, just kind of trying to find their way. So I do think your teenage daughter, a lot of things will resonate, you know, with her. And just, you know, I think they're just kind of timeless lessons. And a lot of times they're lessons that you probably learned growing up as well, Aaron, but you just kind of forgot them. So it's just, I think it'll trigger some good memories for you, and it'll probably make you laugh and smile too.
Well, and I think to add to that, and I believe Aaron said that it's a teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. Having read the book, there are a few F-bombs that you'll find in there. But if it makes you feel any better, Aaron, Susan does apologize to her mom in the very beginning of the book I love that. First, I just want to say, Mom, apologize. You're going to find some of these. That was great.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, and if Erin grew up military, I'm sure she heard it all growing up too, you know, at some point in time.
So, and well, while we're on this subject, let's talk about, because obviously, you know, and this, by the way, this is Erin. I should have spelled it out, but it's A-A-R-O-N. So I'm assuming it's a male. And so let's talk a little bit about that father-daughter relationship. Let's talk about the significance both to you, but just in general, how important this is, maybe even more so in this day and age.
It's hard. My father and I were tremendously close. And, you know, my dad always said we had, you know, growing up in our house, I had one full brother from my parents. And then I had my oldest brother was from my dad's previous marriage. And so, my brother, Matt, and I were the ones that grew up in the house together for the most part. And, my dad always said we had two type A's in the house and two type B's. And my dad and I were the type A's, very regimented, structured. We thrived on that. And so when it came to helping be his caregiver, it resonated with him because I treated him like I would want to be treated if I were in his shoes. And, you know, my dad and I were just always buddies. We just were. I mean, my dad always said that when we would do projects, he would go to ask me for a hammer and I would be standing there with one. Like I had my head in the game and I thought very similarly to him. And I don't think I truly appreciated that until he did pass. I mean, I knew I had a close relationship with my father and I know that not everybody has that. So I do recognize that in the book too. But when it came to my dad, when he passed and we had two services for him, we had a Missouri service. And then about a year later, we had his full military service at Arlington. And I remember I had to get everybody out of the house and nobody was ready. And I remember I just like looked up to the sky and I was like, oh my God, Dad, just help me out here. I was like, I was like herding cats to get everybody out the door. And I never realized that I lost my partner in the family. And, you know, even though he was my mother's husband, he and I were the ones that could get people to fall in line, get people to motivated to do things. And just, you know, I would call my dad a lot of times in the morning because my mother wouldn't be up yet. And I knew he'd be awake. I'd call him at 6 a.m. I'd be up at 5, you know, I'd be up at 7. I'd be up at 5 earlier, but I'd be on my way to work. And we would call and we always said that we could get more done in a 5-minute conversation than a lot of people could get done in a couple of weeks. So we just always had kind of that cadence. And I realized that not everybody has good home lives and good relationships. But the one thing that you can do as an adult is you can actually choose your own family. And I'm a big believer of that. So it's just like if you didn't grow up with the greatest parents, you know, there's always mentors and people that you've probably met that have made an impact for you. I mean, I have a friend that she never knew her father, but she has an uncle that's very close to her and that really gave her some of the fatherly advice and guidance when she needed it most. So I always, you know, think that that's important to recognize as well.
Now, because I read the book, I know the answer to this, but I think a lot of our listeners or viewers would like explain why it's called Pancakes for Roger.
Yeah. So my father, as I mentioned, I was one of his caregivers and my dad and I were so regimented. We had a schedule. So I would get up at 5 a.m. when I was back in Missouri, helping care for him when he was on hospice. I would check on him. If he was good, I'd go to the gym. I'd come back. I'd check on him again. If he was still good, then I'd go get ready for the day. And then I'd come and help him get rallied around. So the last year of his life, he had a feeding tube. And if you've ever dealt with anybody, if you're a caregiver that's had a feeding tube, you know, all their nutrition goes through the tube. Mm-hmm. And my father was also on oxygen. So if anybody's dealt with people that have been on oxygen, if their levels go low, you can get some confusion. So one morning, did the gym thing. He was good, came back. He was still good. And then when I came to get him ready for the day, he wasn't in his hospital bed. And so we were very fortunate that we had hospice at home. So we could be in that home environment. And so he could have his things around him and his dog and his people around him. So that was very important to us, but he wasn't in his hospital bed. And so then I rounded the corner to the living room. He wasn't there. And then I rounded the corner to the kitchen and he was there with his placemat and his silverware, and he had set the table. And I looked at him and I said, "Dad, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I want some pancakes for breakfast." And it just broke my heart. I mean, this man, he never asked for anything. He just didn't. And, you know, with having a feeding tube and my family, man, food is everything. And he wasn't able to partake in the meals. He would sit and he would listen and he would hold my baby niece. But he never asked for anything like this. So I knew that we were dealing with some confusion from oxygen levels, because I knew he couldn't have pancakes. And I looked at him and I said, "Oh, Dad, there's just nothing more than I want to do than give you pancakes for breakfast." But I said, "We got a feeding tube. We are on hospice. We have a DNR." And I said, "If you choke, we're done here. And I just don't think we're quite ready to be done." And of course he said, "Yes, I can." Matt said I could. And Matt's my brother and he's a nurse, and he wasn't there that morning. So I knew we were dealing with some confusion with the oxygen. So I looked at him and I said, "Well, let me see what I can do." So I took his feeding tube formula over to the microwave, heated it up for 14 seconds because the general never wanted 13 or 15 or 12. He'd know. It had to be 14. So I heated up the feeding tube formula and I put the little pitcher on the table, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "That's your syrup." And so his oxygen levels had kind of rallied around. He kind of understood and he said, "Okay." So a few short weeks later, my father did pass away, and I took one day off of work when I came back to New York, and I just needed one day. I needed one day where I didn't have to give myself to anybody else. I could just give to myself because I hadn't been doing that a lot. And my husband said, "Why don't we go to the diner and have some pancakes for your dad?" And so we went to the Bel Air Diner in Queens, New York, and my husband took a picture and we put it on social media. And I recounted the story and explained about the pancake exchange with my father. And I said, "If you're so inclined, why don't you go have some pancakes for Roger and remember all the great things you have in your life and the little things, because the little things are really what end up making the biggest impact in your life." So that's where like the whole Pancakes for Roger concept started. And then it turned into a fundraising effort for the University of Missouri School of Law Veterans Clinic. And the Veterans Clinic provides free legal services for men and women navigating the VA claims and appeals process, discharge upgrades, and a whole lot more. So what we started doing is for every pancake loving picture that we got using the hashtag Pancakes for Roger, then my company, Combs and Company, would make a donation in his honor to the Veterans Clinic. So we started that up in February because his birthday was in February. And so it started out, you know, we got like, I don't know, like 100 pictures or something like that starting. And then we started doing it year after year. And then the idea came to me about writing the book. And so I wrote the book, and it just, my dad was supposed to be a chapter. Like I said, when I publicly speak, I do these quotes, and my dad had a couple of quotes and that was it. But then he took over the whole book like he usually does. So part of the proceeds of the book go to the Veterans Clinic. And then we still continued to do the fundraising efforts for the clinic the month of February. So this past year, we got, you know, all 50 states, we got 24 countries, and we got all 7 continents. So we even got Antarctica. Like, I was blown away. I don't know if we can do that again, but I had a friend that was down there for a cruise for her 81st birthday. And I said, "Oh my God, have pancakes for me. Then we can have Antarctica." So, but it's been one of those things. I mean, you know, back to Rebecca talking about like having a passion and trying to do work that's meaningful. You know, I have a business career, and being successful in business has allowed me to do these passion projects and do the fundraising efforts and do these things that really pull on my heartstrings. So I think that those, you know, doesn't mean that you can't have a career path now that has those things. But for me, it was, you know, working in a business and building that so that I could afford to do these other things later on.
Well, we have another question that's coming in. And this one reads, before he passed, did your father ever speak about the differences between today's military compared to when he was there? I would love to know his thoughts and yours. My son recently spoke to us about possibly joining the Navy. I have some serious reservations about this choice. Would your book be a good one for him to read as well? This is from Wendy in Minnesota.
I mean, I think it would be good for him to read just for the life lessons of it. I mean, if you're wanting to know like on a career military path, I mean, this isn't going to be a book that just kind of like documents that. But I will say that when my father was retiring as a two-star, like he was working in Washington, D.C. His office was at the Pentagon and then later moved to Crystal City. And I do remember the speech that he gave when he was leaving. And he talked about reservist status versus active duty status. And you got to remember, you know, my father was in Vietnam and he was serving during, you know, Desert Storm and, you know, a lot of other different conflicts as well. And he did talk about the reserve status because my father was on the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the Army and the Air National Guard, was his last post. And he did talk about how there's people that volunteer to be reserve with the idea that they're going to have other career paths. And some of those people were getting tapped and pulled to be in active duty status instead of people that had signed up to be a career military. So that's one of the things that he did talk about when he was retiring. But I, for his personal thoughts on the military, I mean, my father served 39 years and 4 months. I don't think he would have done it if he didn't like it. But I do think there has been things that have changed. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are in the military and that have served or that continue to serve. I actually have a friend of mine from high school that I just got the invite to his retirement party. And I'm a little bit jealous about that because he's a couple years younger than me. But, you know, I think one of the things that I have talked to a lot of parents about that they're wanting their kids to go to college and they're concerned about career military, I've encouraged them to check out ROTC programs. So that's the Reserve Officer Training Corps. So I actually had a full ride in the Air Force that, again, like I did that for a couple of years in college. And then when I went non-technical for elementary education, the Air Force said, okay, good job, Susan. We're not going to pay for that. You go be a teacher, you know? So, but it is a way to get your education paid for. And then have something, because at the end of the day, if you do 20 years of military service, you can retire with a full pension. And I mean, most of us to be able to retire in our 40s is kind of unheard of. So having a degree and having that, the education is as kind of a I don't want to say a backup, but just because you're using your degree in your military service too, but just having that to launch into maybe the civilian world after military service. But I think that especially, kids that like regiment, kids that like structure, or even kids that maybe say need that structure to thrive and strive. I wouldn't shy away from it. I would meet with people. I would meet with people that have served active duty. I would meet with reservists. I would meet with men and women and see what their experiences are, because everybody's going to be different. And I can tell you that, you know, I hear some good stories from my friends and I hear some not so good stories. So it really depends. It really, really depends. And it depends on what base you draw to, on where you're going to get stationed to. Like if you're going to get stationed in South Dakota versus like, over in Germany or something like that, depending upon what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Our guest is Susan Combs. The book is Pancakes for Roger, A Mentorship Guide for Slaying Dragons. And if I was to describe it myself, I would say it's sort of like a portable life coach. So there is many life lessons. And although we're talking a lot about her father in the military, it really is about life lessons. So we're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. Our guest is Susan Combs. We're talking about her new book, Pancakes for Roger. Now, one of the things about the book, Susan, that I thought was really nice is you have it broken down into four parts. And I felt like if I want to read about self, you know, I could, you know, as I'm reading part one, and I'm thinking, yeah, this seems like it really fits for me. But at the same time, you know, there were other parts, and you can go into the four different parts. Share a little bit as to about why you did it this way, and what sort of feedback have you gotten from people as to how that's worked for them?
Sure. So as you said, it's separated into four parts. So self-love, family, and career. When the book was being written, it was a lot of interviewing and just talking things out and figuring things out. And we could just, my team, we could see a theme. So we could see the different themes. And so that's how we picked the self-love, family, and career, because, you know, at the end of the day, those are kind of the four pillars in somebody's life when you think about it. And it's a book that's written in vignette style. So if you've never read something that's in vignette style, basically it's kind of a plug and play. I mean, I always tell people, if you read this start to finish, it would take you about three and a half hours. I'm not a fancy word person. My father taught me, and it's in the book, it's important for you to be understood, but it's more important for you not to be misunderstood. So that's what I wanted to convey in the book and make it in just easy to digest information. But I would say the shortest chapter is maybe like two paragraphs. I think the longest one might be 8 or 9 pages. So it's really easy to pick up and put down. I have a lot of people that keep it by their bedside and they read like one of the vignettes a day and almost use it as kind of like a daily, you know, daily reflection type of thing. And then each section is kind of recapped in the syrup. So it has like the different lessons that you can kind of pull out from each section to remind you as well.
Well, and actually what I did, and it wasn't so much, I used to read before I went to sleep, so I would keep things by the bed. But now, because I do most everything digitally, I would have it on the computer and I would be working on something. I'm working on a case and I'm doing something and I'm feeling just kind of stuck. And I'd go, okay, I need to put my mind somewhere else. And it's one of the things, in fact, Malcolm Gladwell talks about how sometimes you just need to go to something else. And so what I have found is I would go, and if what I was dealing with was kind of a self thing, then I might do that, you know, but if it was a family issue or a career issue, you know, I would just kind of go to that part of the book and read a little bit more. You know, over this last week. So I thought it was one of those types of books that you would keep around. You can read it all once, but then if you know where things are within it, sometimes it's good to just go back and refresh on that.
Yeah, I like that. And I've heard a lot of people say that, actually, that it's just, and I tell people, I mean, like, my Uncle Joe, when my brother was born, my Uncle Joe told my mom, he said, Gloria, like, everybody's going to give you advice. Take what you want, throw out the rest. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like what this book is. Not every lesson is going to resonate with somebody. But like you said, if they can kind of file it away in the back of their mind, and then maybe if they have a friend that has an issue that it pertains to, or maybe later on in their life, they're like, wait, I read something about that. There was something in there. They can go back and just kind of, you know, review the information again.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. So, you know, we talked a little bit about part one where we mentioned about the, you know, don't let the alligator, your alligator mouth overload your tadpole behind and drive the car. Share with us maybe another part of a small chapter out of that you feel people have gotten back to you and said, that really resonated with me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, from the self chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the big lessons that I get people that talk about, because when I mentor, I talk about this a lot, is, you know, my dad told me that there's kind of three facets of your life. And he talked about that a lot. And he talked about how, you know, basically you have the thing that you do for a living, the person that you're with, and the place mm-hmm. that you live. And he said, if you're happy with 3 out of 3, you're living a golden life. Even if you're happy with 2 out of 3, you're not doing too bad. But if you're happy with 1 or none of those things, then you're the only person that has the power to get off your butt and do something about it. And so that's always been something that's resonated with me, because it's, at the end of the day, I mean, like, I live in New York City. I love New York City. It works for me, does not work for everybody. I mean, I grew up in a town of 1,000 people. Half the people there think I'm nuts for living here. But it's something that just works for me. I have an incredible husband. My first husband was not the one for me. He wasn't a bad guy, but wasn't my guy for long term. But, and then what I do for a living, I mean, I own an insurance brokerage firm, but I do a lot of expert witnessing all across the country and get to work on litigation cases that just really kind of light me up intellectually. So I'm doing all right right now. Doesn't mean that I don't walk into my office someday saying, looking at my business partner, Colleen, and saying, what are we going to buy the freaking ice cream truck? I'm ready to go. But, you know, I think that it's just like recognizing that some of those things, not everything is going to be great every single day. And, but good or bad, this too shall pass, right? I think that's something that we hear a lot when we're growing up too.
Well, when you just mentioned about the good fit that you have with your second husband, that's also one of the chapters of your part two, which is love and finding the right fit. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I will tell you, the man that I married at 23 was far different than the man that I married at 32. That was very, very different. But, you know, like with my husband, Sean, he gets me. He like, I mean, I always laugh that it's just like, he walks into a room and he knows like what version of Susan he's dealing with, because I can be a lot. I know I can be a lot. But he's just somebody that allows me to be me. And I think a lot of times, especially young people, they have no idea what a good relationship looks like. And, you know, I was somebody that I had great parents. My parents had a great marriage. And so I had very good marriage behavior modeled for me. But when I got married at 23, it was, oh, do you like this? I like this. Oh, do you want to go hiking every Sunday? I want to go hiking every Sunday. It's like the, you know, the runaway bride that at the end of the day, she didn't know how she liked her eggs. And so I think I didn't truly know who I was as a person. So anytime I'm talking to young people and they're talking about like, oh, their boyfriend, their girlfriend, and want to get married, I always say like, oh, wait until you're 26. I think people change, and especially women, I think they change tremendously between the ages of 23 and 26. You know, 23, your parents are still bailing you out when you do a bonehead move. Doesn't mean that 26-year-olds don't get their parents bailing them out by a bonehead move. But I started a company at 26. So I wasn't coming to my parents for money. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew how to be a grown-up, how to pay my bills, how to make sacrifices of my own, because I believed in the career path. And so, you know, my husband enhances that. And so I truly feel that the person that you end up spending your life with can make you better or worse every single day. And, you know, my husband says to me, I mean, he's like, you know, I love you, but he's like, I like you. And a lot of times that's more important. And because you know, Alan, you could be hanging out with my husband and I, and you would never feel like the third wheel. You would think it was like three friends hanging out. And I love that about my marriage. I love that about my marriage, because it's not like, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm, you know, there's like a bicker fest at dinner where you're like, oh, can I ask for the check and get out of here, or where it's just like people are all over each other and you're like, God, get a room. Like, I don't feel comfortable here. It just is. So, I mean, I think a lot of people settle. I think a lot of people settle in life, and I don't think that they realize how things can be. And so when I hear somebody talking about a relationship and they're crying 3 months in, I'm like, run. It's not going to get any better. It's not going to get any better. That's the honeymoon stage. So it's just like having that good foundation. And I think also being a very good communicator. You know, my mom, I remember my mother saying to me, she's like, you know, you're kind of all out there with him, and you just really, you kind of say how it is. And I said, you know what? I never want him to come back to me and say, I didn't know how you felt about this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, by being honest and being upfront, I mean, my husband and I we're coming up on being together for 19 years, and we've had like three fights. Doesn't mean that we, you know, don't bicker from time to time, but it's just, we don't allow things to get to that point because we communicate. And so I think that that's one of the things that just people take for granted, and they just don't realize how important that is. And I also think with COVID, a lot of people forgot how to communicate and interact with humans in a personal nature. And so I think that's really, really important to hone those skills for sure.
And, you know, for everybody out there, what Susan just said about communication, right on target. And in fact, if that was the only thing that you got either from this conversation or from the book, you are light years ahead of where you started. It is all about the communication. I love the fact that you just mentioned about liking and loving. I think that in many cases when we're young, we lust
Yeah.
And we forget about the other two, and we think we kind of confuse them. And I know that I'm in a place right now to where I like, I love, and I lust one person.
That's awesome.
And that is when I think you know that you found the right person. And as you said, they get you, they let you be you, yeah. You let them be them, and you still like it.
Yeah. So true. I mean, my husband and I laugh. Like I'll come home from work and I'll be like, yeah, I've talked to enough people today. I'm not going to talk anymore tonight. And he's like, oh, okay. And so it's just like, but he lets me be me and it's okay. Some guys couldn't handle that. And they would just, their feelings would be hurt and be like, you don't want to hang out with me. He'll be like, hey, I'm going to make a salad. You want me to make you one and bring it to the bedroom and you can just watch your junk TV. Sure. That's great. He gets me. So. Mm-hmm.
And you know, and you also, as you're saying this, what I'm realizing is that you're taking responsibility for all of this.
Yeah.
And you're not doing something different. And as you said that, you mentioned the thing about not wanting to talk. I used to go to conferences a lot, for my businesses. And after being at a 4-day conference where you're talking nonstop, I would come home and I didn't really want to talk. The problem was that I wasn't taking responsibility enough to say what you just said, going, look, I've been talking for 4 days. I just don't want to talk. Instead, I would stumble through it. So I would try to carry a conversation because I thought that it was what she wanted. And it wasn't until I really matured much later in life that I realized that I needed to just be upfront and say, yeah. I'm not ready. I'm not in a good place right now to talk. So I love that what I'm getting from you is you're taking responsibility, you're communicating, and it makes for a much happier life.
I think so.
So I'm looking, we've got about 7 minutes. So let's touch a little bit on family, which again is part three in the book. So if you were to paint a picture for the viewers or listeners, what are they going to find in chapter three or part three, I should say?
So with family, when I speak on the book, the first thing I put up is a big picture of a hot button, like a red button with flames all around it. And I'm like, does anybody need to call their therapist? Because we're going to dive into family, because it's just, you have the people that adore their family, which is me. You have people that move across the country from me. Your family, which is me. There's people that have like a secret family, which is like, you know, another book for me down the road. And there's, you know, and then there's the people that just like, they just choose their own family, and that's okay too. And so I think, you know, for me, probably one of the biggest lessons in the book on the family side is from my brother, Matt. Matt's in the middle, and you know, Matt and I are tremendously close. Matt is actually, you know, I just feel like I got to give a plug because my brother's the longest surviving male bone marrow transplant out of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Wow. And he has been in remission for over 32 years. And I actually got to go with him to Memphis this year for his 32-year checkup. And it was fantastic because it was something my dad would have normally gone with him on. And so having that time together was just really, really good. But, you know, after I moved to New York and I was back one Christmas, my brother Matt said to my brother David and myself, he said, you know, if we were never born siblings, we would never be friends. And sometimes people think like, whew, that's mean. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's very freeing because it's recognizing that we are all very different people, very, very different people. And personality wise, interest wise, what we like to do. I mean, like even the jokes, you know, like my brother David is like this science guy, this technology guy, computer guy. He'll tell science jokes and I'm sitting there going, what the hell? You know, Matt is like, he can rip off a limerick with all the dirty words in the world. Like he is so quick. And then I'm like, I'm glad I'm pretty, you know, I mean, because it's just, you know, I mean, we're all so, so different. And I'm definitely the most driven one out of all of us. And they'll all tell you that. I mean, they would have told you that when I was 10 years old. But understanding that, I think sometimes people think their families and their siblings should be best friends and that it all should be a Hallmark movie. And that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. And it's just like understanding what you guys are good at and what your talents are. Then, you know, in the family, when there's a family crisis, who you can tap in for what. You know, Mountain, my mother, has had a hard time with our father being gone. She's struggled with sadness and with grief, and you know, as we all have, but I am not the person for that. And I recognize that I'm not the person for that. I am very calculated. I am very like, you know, get off your ass and go do something about it type of person. And I haven't struggled with mental health situations. So I know that about myself, that I'm not the right person. But my brother Matt is a good person for that. He's, you know, he's a medical professional, and, you know, he's had his own, you know, issues with depression and things like that. So he can speak to that to my mother. So knowing kind of what you're good at, it, like, you can pull people in when you need to pull people in. And so I think that's really, really important, especially with the family aspect.
Oh, and I like that. And not expecting something out of them that might be what you would do, because it isn't them. So yeah I agree. We have another question that has come in. This one reads, as a woman entrepreneur, I feel a kinship with you. When I went to school, it was inferred that I should look for a job that I could do until I got married and started a family. Fortunately, I married a wonderful man who supported my passion to create and run a successful business. We raised our family together and have given our children the tools to pursue their dream businesses. Do you believe that our school system today are providing children with the tools they need to pursue and successfully run their own businesses? And this is from Kathleen in Oregon.
Okay, so I have to say, I do not have children, right? I feel like I need to put that caveat. You know, I've got kids and things like that, and I mentor a lot of kids, but I do not have children. So, you know, when it comes to the school systems, I don't know if I'm the right person to speak to that. Okay. But I will say that my parents had a partnership from the beginning. And, you know, my dad changed just as many diapers as my mom did. And my dad cooked just like my mom cooked. And they did have a partnership. So I think growing up when maybe that wasn't normal, was very, very important, because I know, like what you're saying, that sometimes they're like, oh, like my stepmother-in-law, I remember her telling me that her grandmother went to college, and I was shocked, because I was like, your grandmother went to college? And she said, yes, she wanted to go to law school, but she said her father told her he would pay for college if she went for home economics. And so she got a degree in home economics, but she made couture doll dresses for my stepmother-in-law because she knew how to do it very, very well. So I think that one of those things that, you know, when it comes to education and things like that, I don't think 4-year college is necessarily an end-all be-all. I went to a big university, but I think, you know, trade schools and apprenticeships, I think, are so, so important. And there's different paths for different kids. And I think that having the one size fits all, I don't think is the right approach. And I think my father did a very good job of that, because, you know, going back to saying that he had 3 very, very different children, he raised us very differently. And, you know, when we would have punishments, a punishment for me would be a lot different than a punishment for Matt or David. So I really appreciated that. But I think it's awesome that, you know, your husband encouraged you. I have a husband that encourages me too. Like, he's never said like, oh, you know, but I mean, I'm in an industry that's 14% women. And so with what you're saying definitely resonates with me, because it's, you know, I love men. I mean, I grew up military, so I was around a considerable amount of them. But in my industry, it can still be old school on a lot of things. So having, I think, you know, pushing your daughter, like if you have a daughter, letting her know, I mean, you're a great living example. And I've always had my friends that are mothers that are working. They look at being a working mother as being a good example to their daughter and their children, to letting them know that they can do everything. But the one thing I will say is, make your husband your partner. And it sounds like you have. So I think you and your husband having a marriage where it has been a partnership, where he has been a cheerleader and pushed you, is probably the best education that your kids can have, because they can see that there's a balance there.
Exactly. Yes. Model it for them. I agree. That's the best we can do. Susan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, for everybody out there, the book is Pancakes for Roger, a mentorship guide for slaying dragons. And don't let that title confuse you. It is a more of a life mentoring book, or a life coaching book, because there's so many great things in there in a variety of subjects. And again, it starts with self. It goes into love. It goes into family, and it goes into career. So Susan, thank you so much for not only writing the book, but for making a positive difference in the world for all of us.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it.
All right. Now for everybody out there, let's see what we've got coming up next week. Be with us next week when we're joined by Kiva Schuler as she discusses her new book, The Peaceful Parenting, and it's either revolution or evolution, depending on how you look at it. It's the changing world or changing the world by changing how we parent. Now, for everybody, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know that I greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. Now, if you have some questions out there that you would like answered, Rebecca did, send them in, and we'll try to see which of our guests that are coming up that would be the perfect one to answer your question. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.